Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Felix Graf Adelman, or Felix, as you like to be called.
Absolutely.
Excellent. We're going to be talking today a wee bit about Württemberg, a wee bit about the soils and that sort of stuff, and some of the grape varieties. You grow a grape variety people may know as Blaufränkisch, but you guys call it Limburger, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Excellent. We'll talk about that later on, but do you want to just give us an overview of Württemberg? It is Württemberg. It looks like Württemberg when you look at it, but it's a Württemberg.
It's Württemberg, exactly. Very, very well pronounced.
Yeah, I've been practicing. No one will believe me. Anybody who listens to my show know my pronunciation is appalling.
It's wonderful. And
where is Württemberg really relative to Germany and maybe some other wine regions nearby?
Yeah, it is in the south of Germany, and the region. I mean, the country itself is called Baden-Württemberg. So Baden and Württemberg are, in terms of wine, are two different zones, but they belong to each other. That means Württemberg is right on the border to Baden. In the south, it's about 180 kilometers south from Frankfurt. And it's actually a very, very huge...
It's just outside, surrounding the town of Stuttgart, which is where I've been
staying. Yeah. Exactly, exactly. It's around Stuttgart. My estate is 20 kilometers.
I must admit, just an aside, I booked the accommodation in Stuttgart because it was near the wineries I wanted to go and all sorts of stuff. And I didn't have high hopes for Stuttgart. Yeah. But I tell you what, it's a nice place.
It's okay. It's not like the most beautiful city compared to Hamburg, but it's better than
I'd even hoped for.
Yeah, exactly. And what's really great about Stuttgart, that I must say, because I've studied abroad, I've lived in other cities in Germany when I was younger, when I was studying, and I came back and I was really scared because I lived in Hamburg, I lived sometime in New York, and I lived there and there, and I was amazed. Most of all, I don't know any city in the world where you find so many good restaurants.
Yep.
It's a small city, but there's so many restaurants, also star restaurants.
It seems incredible. Reasonably compact as well. You know, we're staying up on the hills, but it's an easy walk into town.
Yeah, exactly.
It reminds me a wee bit of Wellington in New Zealand, where there's a lot of hills surrounding the town, and you can walk into town, which is quite nice.
It's nice,
particularly if you're going to have a glass of wine or two.
It's true. And the landscape surrounding is really, really beautiful compared to the rest of Germany, because you got the hills. Like as I said, I used to live in the north of Germany for quite some time, and landscape is quite boring compared to it. But let's get back to Württemberg. Now I'm talking, I'm pronouncing it just like you. Württemberg is really a very, very huge area. We have about 10,500 hectares of vineyards in Württemberg, which is quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. I heard it was the fourth largest wine producing region in Germany.
That may very well be true, yes. Well,
that's what my wine atlas says.
Okay, yeah. No, it's definitely true. Even though it's not so well known, it's actually a thing that I have to fight with very often, because of course, usually, you know, wine estates, they're known for their name, so people know Graf Adelman. But people who don't know you, they're looking for the region, and they're looking, Württemberg, okay, that's Trollinger. You know, Trollinger is the most famous grape from Württemberg, but actually it's not a real red wine. It's as I said before, to me, a Trollinger is the best rosé in the world, but you can't compare it to, I don't know, a Cabernet Sauvignon or to a Blaufränkisch. It's different. But Württemberg, unfortunately, but for high-class producing vineyards, it's sometimes a little bit difficult, because people think that in Württemberg we only grow Trollinger for €1.19. Part of the truth is that Württemberg, with its huge, huge amount of hectares of vineyards, if I'm not mistaken, 83% is owned by co-ops.
Oh, yeah.
That means they are producing mainly quantity for a low price. And that makes the market more difficult for wine estates like us and my colleagues to sell high-class wine from Württemberg to people that don't know you yet. You always have to explain, no, I'm not only growing Trollinger. Yes, I have wines that cost more than €1.50. You know, it sounds stupid, but it is like that. I mean, in Germany these days, still the average price being paid for a bottle of wine is €2. I mean, it's probably the same in England.
No, I think we were saying earlier that in England the average price is now £4.50, much more, but as I said, you know, tax is £3.50.
£4.50 bottle of wine.
That is incredible. But it's also being explained, I mean, do you guys have Aldi and Lidl?
Yeah.
Because in Germany, 47% of the wine that's being sold is being sold through Aldi and Lidl. Yeah. That explains it. And 67% actually is foreign wine, not German wine. It's all mostly, of course, France, Italy, Spain, New Zealand.
No, New Zealand wine. Maybe Aussie.
Exactly. So, but these 83% of co-ops, that explains why this region is not so well known for high-class wine, but rather for the, yeah.
Your wines certainly were good quality wines, you know, and particularly your whites. There was a nice precision there, you know. The acidity wasn't always particularly high. I mean, it was there and there, but it wasn't normally when people talk about precise wines or elegant wines, they're talking about acidity in the wine being quite high, whereas your wines were clean, they had a definition to them. They weren't massively intense wines though, but they were precise. You know, you could see at them in a nice big glass and a nice table and people really getting into them.
It's a very, very nice description. And it's absolutely true. I'm not looking for like only the fruity and very full-bodied, let's say like the wow wines where people smell and they're trying to think, wow, what a wine. We're rather looking for complexity and elegance. And of course, that's sometimes the harder way because just like you said, these are wines that you should like sit down to and in a big glass, and you can really discover many things. You don't have to. I mean, I'm not the guy who says, oh my God, please sit down and think about the wine. Don't think, please drink it. I'm a big fan of drinking and also drinking a lot sometimes. Yeah. So, but yeah, you described it very, very well. But compared to other colleagues, sometimes it's difficult because you always feel you have to explain the wines because they're not self-explaining sometimes. Mm.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk a wee bit about Trollinger, and also I want to talk about Braufränkisch, or as you guys like to call it, Limburger as well, because Trollinger's the key grape in the region, as you're saying. You guys don't really like to make a red wine out of it. Do you make a red wine? I didn't try it.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, no, you haven't, because I said we only try it.
For the nice stuff.
56 varieties. Exactly, yeah. We do, even though, of course, the color is not very intense. The grapes are very huge. They're large, and so there's
lots of water. Flesh to skin.
Exactly,
yeah.
Lots of flesh. So it is darker than a rosé, but it's not very dark. I think a Trollinger is really, when you drink it in the right moment, with the right intention, it's a wonderful wine. I'm not ashamed of it.
Can you chill it down?
I would definitely chill it down. I mean, not as cold as a white wine, but, you know, it's wonderful. Just cool it down a bit and drink it in the summertime on your balcony, just like you would with a rosé.
Yeah.
But it's so much more wine than a rosé because, unfortunately, as you all know, rosé sometimes is not always just the highest quality stuff.
No.
And a Trollinger, you know, as I said, with the right intention, in the right moment, it's perfect. The sad thing is just that people think Trollinger is German red wine from Württemberg. And it is true, it's red wine, it's from Württemberg, but it's not the thing that we're looking for.
I quite like the Limburg / Braufränkisch. I think it was quite hard for me to say, you know, it wasn't a big wine, like you were saying earlier about your whites, they're not big wines, they're not sort of, oh, you're going to need a knife and fork to drink this wine. But particularly some of the pure Limburgers. I know you've got a cuvée that's mainly Limburger, but I actually preferred your varietals, and I thought they were quite interesting. What are the typical aromas to expect?
The Limburger, really, as I said, for me, it's one of the greatest varieties. Well, the greatest, at least, that I'm growing. And the aroma, we talked about this before. Yeah. I smell a lot of blackcurrant or cassis, as the French say, where you have more of the blackberries, which is definitely like the fruit that is most obvious. But what I really like is that it very often, at least in high qualities, it's got a very, very nice peppery.
Yeah, I definitely got the pepperiness. That was really quite nice. It was like a cool climate Syrah to me. Some A couple of them were, one of them was particularly peppery, the other one was a bit more relaxed about it, but you could, that's it. It was a, you know, it was a nice spice in there.
Exactly.
The other thing I noticed in the one of the older wines, the 2007, had a slight meaty, gamey type note to it, which is quite attractive.
That was the 2008, actually, yeah. Oh, that's a bit, I think, yeah. It's really got this, can you say it in English? I think we say sometimes the wild meat aromas.
Yeah.
Of course, it sounds quite disgusting in a way.
Yeah, no, but wild meat has more flavor to it than normal meat.
Exactly. And that's something that really goes very well, especially, unfortunately, you had to drink the wines very, very young, and I just opened the bottle. If they get a little bit of air or they age, even these aromas, they turn into a wonderful bouquet that gets like a little bit, what do you call it, like very, very intense, very, very intense.
It's certainly nice. I've had a few Braufränkisches from other parts, more Eastern Europe. I think it must be more quite popular over in Eastern Europe, Slovenia, Slovakia, that sort of stuff. I haven't really been overly impressed with it, but actually your one thought, yeah, no, that is the business. If the price was a bit more reasonable, I would have picked a case up.
Now that you said that, I'm not going to give it for you as I was planning as
a
present.
No. Oh, no, bridges.
No, yeah, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, no, I think it's really good. And I suppose structurally, quite velvety and almost voluptuous at times. Quite a nice wine.
Exactly, and especially needs time, as always. But unfortunately, the vintners like me, we never sell wines that are not ready to drink. But we all know there's a difference between the moment when a wine is ready to drink and the wine when you would really want it to drink.
Yeah. You sell it when it can be drunk as opposed to when you'd like
exactly.
to drink it.
And unfortunately, I have to make my customers wait, because I have to sell it. I need the money to pay my bills. Really. Otherwise, I need it. It's not that the count in the castle with the old sports cars has so much money that he doesn't need it. Unfortunately, not. I'm working on it, though.
Yeah. And, you're in the wrong business, mate.
Yeah, I know. I knew that before. Fortunately, I was not surprised by that. Yeah, especially if I may go back to Württemberg in general a second. As I said, it's 83% of the co-ops, and there is many like single estates like us, but like really the top quality notch is very, very little or small. I mean, you probably have heard about the VDP. VDP is a group, a German group. It exists actually since the early 20th century. And within Germany, there are about 200 wine estates inside this group. And they it's a quality group. And probably you can say that, let's say most of the German top estates are in the VDP. There may be one or two exceptions, but usually they are. And in Württemberg, we have 15 estates.
That's the logo, isn't it?
The logo, the eagle with a... No, just to tell you, out of the 10,500 hectares in Württemberg, only 300 are owned by VDP vintners, just to give you an idea like how small we are and how we fight against also with the prices and the quality. It's so hard to really tell the world that Württemberg is
and where do you sell your wines?
We sell them 99% in Germany. Of course, the Trollinger goes 100% in the Stuttgart region.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know,
it's the table wine.
Exactly. You know, and the guys in Hamburg, they would laugh about a Trollinger. That's the sad part, because they're not able to accept it as what it is. The biggest mistake you can do is compare a Trollinger to a Merlot. You know, you would never do that. Anyway, so we sell it, Trollinger here, and then, it's all around Germany. But, of course, the focus is in the south. And, I would love to do more export, but the thing is that we don't even have the quantity to really do big export things. Sometimes I even have to turn down the greatest opportunities. I remember Lufthansa once wanted to buy a great wet wine of mine for the first class passengers, which is like the best PR you can have.
Yeah, yeah.
But I couldn't do it because they wanted to have all of it. And so if I do that, all my, I don't know, you know, the restaurants, they'll be angry at me that they can't buy the wine. And
you can't sell to a single company, because when they change their mind.
Exactly. 3 years later, they dump you, and then you're like, okay, I'm back. Want my wine? No.
And there's a group of wine people who have got together called the German Barrique Forum.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that?
That was founded during the 80s. And of course, my father is also part of that until today. That was like, a group that joined together to share knowledge about vinifying in barrique barrels to gain knowledge. And
so it's just a collection of winemakers and that who get together and...
Exactly. Like, even before that, the Hades group was founded. Hades was, it's just a very small group. Hades is not only the god of the underworld, it's actually H for Hohenlohe, A for Edelman, D for Drautz, E for Elwanger, and S for Sonnenhof. That's five vintners here around the corner who started, like, really to work with the barriques together very early. That was in the early 80s.
Yep.
And later the Deutsche Barrique Forum. Since, as I said before, working with barrique barrels needs a lot of precision, a lot of knowledge, lots of experience. That's what I was looking for.
And you had some Hungarian oak in there as well. Not much, but a wee bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's important not only to work with one brand, because just like with the grape varieties, the complexity is what's important. You need, that's again the experience part, because you need to put your wine at least once into a barrel to know how it turns out. So, for example, I know that the François Frère barrels, they work very well for the Pinot, and then again the Demptos is better for the Lemberger. So you need to find that out. What barrel, what toasting, and then how much new oak do you use, how much second age oak you use. So that's a big logistical process. That's the experience.
Just takes time, yeah. And I suppose it's quite hard, because, you know, you buy a barrel, you stick your wine in it, there's 225 litres of the stuff, you know, or more.
Exactly. And the barrel is almost 700 euros itself. So you really have to think about it. And so we really went there. We wrote down how each wine develops in each barrel so we would know the next time. And yeah, that's just a process when you have 30 years of experience.
Okay, then. I think we'll wrap it up there, Felix. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.